He's describing the world of perfect life, the life force. The life force that has not been twisted, perverted by desire or ego or passion. Simply the life force as it is. It's a creative energy that has just gone forth from the Supreme at the level of manifestation. That's all. So all this life force has to be, is created from that original delight of creation. All creation starts from Ananda. You don't do anything unless you really take joy in doing it. The Divine created the universe because He wanted to. He was not compelled. There was no compulsion. When there is no compulsion, there is no pressure, there is freedom, but that freedom is delight. Unless you have all kinds of other values and standards, profit and gain, you do something because it will give you some kind of an advantage. This is what comes in the human life. So the pure, simple delight of action is not there. Here, this is that world. Ashwapati is moving through that world. The play of energy, of manifestation, of creation. And so he calls it the youth of soul. There reigned a breath of high immune content. That delight that cannot be in any way distorted, diminished. It is pure Ananda. There reigned a breath of high immune content, a fortunate gait of days in tranquil air. Fortunate in the sense where there is nothing to be gained, there is only joy, there is nothing to fear, nothing to lose. That's why tranquil, where we are completely free of any kind of opposition. A flood of universal love and peace. A sovereignty of tireless sweetness lived, like a song of pleasure on the lips of time. A large spontaneous order freed the will. Now this is very interesting, because in that sense of freedom, there is only order, there is no disorder. Wherever there is disorder, there is the beginning of the egoistic error. The ego will come in. So where there is purity, there is just the play of the divine, there is always order. Whereas in our notion of what is good, what is right, we have our standards, and these standards break the order. Each one has his own value, his own standard. So the sense of the universal Ananda is not felt. When the first condition, therefore, is the abolition of the ego. At this stage, there is no such thing as ego in this vital world. It is simply a play of force. It's like a river that is flowing. So a large spontaneous order freed the will, a sun-frank winging of the soul to bliss. The breadth and greatness of the unfettered act and the swift fire heart's golden liberty. There was no falsehood of soul severance. There came no crookedness of thought or word to rob creation of its native truth. All was sincerity and natural force. So you have this play of absolute purity. He often describes purity, Sri Aurobindo's mother, as sincerity. Where there is absolute sincerity, there is absolute purity. So there was a kind of continuous sovereignty of sweetness, of purity, of joy, like a song of pleasure on the lips of time. A large spontaneous order freed the will. Naturally, will is a dynamic aspect. It is not enough to dream. You put the dream into expression, the life force is a dynamic force. But it is spontaneously flows in the right way. It doesn't have to decide what is the right thing to do. There is no mind. There is only the vital energy. A sun flank, absolutely open to light, winging of the soul to bliss. The breadth and greatness of the unfettered act. We get the image, you know, of in the ancient, you might say, epics and legends, the stories of beings. They are obviously cosmic forces. They are not human beings. Of the unfettered act, capable almost of limitless energy. There is no fetter means like a bondage, like a chain, something is tied. So action that is not limited. If there is no limit, there is no tiredness. If there is tiredness, there is weakness. There's the failure to receive the energy. We slowly fade. But there, it's just the spontaneous manifestation of the divine energy. Of the unfettered act. And the swift fire heart's golden liberty. That is the whole thing. It is simply the sense of the delight of existence. There was no falsehood of soul severance. Severance, you know, when it is cut off, separated. We are separated. We all have a soul. We all have to take time to find it because we are not aware. There is the surface person. We take a long time in our lives to develop our surface personality of mind and life and body and thought and action. All this takes so much time, which we call education perhaps, that the relationship with the inner presence of the divine is not felt, not believed in often, not we don't connect ourselves with the real person that we are. Actually, that is what is called yoga. The meaning of the word yoga is joining, to be in union with. We have to be in union with ourselves. There is a surface self, and there is an inner self. That inner self is our true being. There is a surface self, which we call our little present being. And because these two, especially the surface self, has forgotten that inner self, we have lost touch with our inner self. The surface being guides, tells us what to do, where to go. We get into error, we get into suffering, we get into difficulty. That is the whole problem. The inner presence does not interfere. It does not ask to be looked at. It waits until the time comes that you turn your vision inwards and find out, who am I? Am I this surface person? Or am I that deeper person who is forever in a state of quiet joy, no disturbance? There is no death. There is no darkness. There is no ignorance. That is the person that we really are. That is the person we never usually take time to find out. And that is the purpose of education, actually, to become who you are. And all ancient training in all ancient schools of training is based on this. Find out who you are. Become yourself. But who is that self? Where is that self? You look for him everywhere. He's right there inside. While men seek thee outside and never find, but that presence is ourself. And that is the source. Oh, bliss, as its mother is being described in one of the lines. Oh, bliss, whoever dwells deep hid within, while men seek thee outside and never find. We look for joy in all kinds of things. She's right inside. We don't take time to look for it. That is the divine Ananda. That is the original creative life force. And that is the poem Life. He describes life as daughter of ecstasy. She's a projection of the creative Ananda. Daughter of delight, mystic miracle, daughter of delight. Life, thou ecstasy. That is how he describes. So if we remember this, we don't have to try to be happy. We are basically made of the stuff of joy. It is what we are made of. The swift fire heart's golden liberty. There was no falsehood of soul severance. There came no crookedness of thought or word to rob creation of its native truth. All was sincerity and natural force. There freedom was sole rule and highest law. There law and freedom are not opposites. Whereas in our society, in our ordinary notions, law and freedom are not the same. Automatically you are free. This is one of man's early dreams. You know, we want anarchy. In a sense, perhaps Auroville is supposed to have been based on a divine anarchy. But anarchy cannot be as long as ignorance is ruler. As long as the ego is there, there cannot be. So anarchy has become synonymous with something that is disorder and complete confusion, which is filled with error. Whereas anarchy is where there is no ruler. Spontaneously, the truth rules. From within, it is the divine truth that rules. You don't rule anything. There is no one. But for that, you have to be the truth. You have to live the truth. Otherwise, it is not possible. These dreams of utopia and anarchy, they have become synonymous with impossibilities. Because we start from the wrong end. We try to improve ourselves from the outside. We have to be living within. If we live within, if we find our real self, then these problems will not arise. In a happy series, climbed or plunged these worlds. It's a happy series because on every plane, there is a material plane where there is beauty and harmony and joy. There is a plane of life, the bird, the flower, the animal, the sense of perfect simplicity, purity. They live for the delight of existence. Man too is part of that world. But man has brought in his mind. Man has brought in all the other elements, possibilities of a greater evolution, where there is also the possibility of greater errors. The more your possibilities, the more your difficulties multiply. So, in a happy series, here this only joy, only happiness, climbed or plunged these worlds. In realms of curious beauty and surprise, curious in a sense, strange, unusual. Because our standards of beauty are often formulated by certain mental standards. Beauty is based on harmony of form, but the sense of form, the sense of what should be, is decided by a mind. Nature decides beauty in all different forms. The same beauty that is there in the curve of a wave is there in a dewdrop. She doesn't take time to select what kind of beauty to manifest. But we have said, this is beautiful, that is not beautiful, because I have made standards. The standards are not made by life, they are made by mind. As I grow, I formulate my values, my standards, and the spontaneity is not there anymore. Not that they are always wrong. For the time being, these standards are perhaps required, because I live within the limits of my small consciousness. I do need standards for now. But I am not part of the universal consciousness. That is why I don't feel the play of the divine energy in all things all the time. That is my smallness, because I am not capable. Whereas these forces in nature don't have egos. You don't have the ego that is there in the wave of the ocean. It's just a wave. It's a perfect curve it makes. It's there for a second and then it crashes. It's no longer there. It doesn't weep to have fallen. It rises, it sparkles, it breaks down. It's beautiful. It's beautiful when it is gone, beautiful when it was there. Life is nothing but the delight of existence in any form, in non-existence as well. In fields of grandeur and of tight and power. Life played at ease with her immense desires, as if she's letting go of all her energies in any manner. So you can have the splendor, for instance, of a huge mountain that is touched by the sun and is golden on the top, or even a blaze of fire, which for us would be frightening, has its grandeur, has its magnificence as well. Storms and cyclones have their beauty, have their greatness. We look at them with fear. We look at them with the thought of what danger, what destruction may come from that cyclone. But in itself, it's a power. As if life has let loose her energy in any form, without any calculation. It is the calculation that gives fear. That I don't know how to handle, I wouldn't be able to handle this. If this kind of cyclone hits my house, it'll be gone. So the sense of the greatness of that power is the whole. It can't be felt because of the fear. Fear, as Mother calls it, is an impurity. We are not pure. We are not pure because we have egos. So life played at ease with her immense desires. 1,000 Edens she could build, nor pause. That is the image of the Garden of Eden, of perfection, of happiness, where there was no sense of wrong, no sense of sin, no sense of error. Later, man brought in these notions. No bound was set to her greatness and to her grace and to her heavenly variety. Awake with the cry and stir of numberless souls, arisen from the breast of some deep infinite, smiling like a newborn child at love and hope, in her nature housing the immortal's power, in her bosom bearing the eternal will, no guide she needed but her luminous heart. This is the divine creative energy. No fall debased the Godhead of her steps. It happens for us, there's a fall. That light, that joy in us, our little beings, can't bear the pressure, and so there's a sense of failure, there's a sense of incapacity, and therefore there is darkness. At this stage, for them, there is no darkness. No alien night had come to blind her eyes. Alien night. Night is there. Also, night has it. Night also is gorgeous. Night is not. Night is one of the brides of the sun. You know, in the tradition, you have the sun god. He had two wives. One of them was Aditi, and the other one is Diti. Diti is darkness, but she is also the bright bride of the sun. It is not looked on as something that is contrary to the light. It completes the sense of light. But alien night, that notion of night that refuses light, not that night that completes or supports the sense of light. Because in our world, night is not something that is associated with light. But night is the mother of light. All light starts from night. Every dawn is born after night. Night gives birth to light all the time. Always. That is the whole mystery. That life and light are not born from darkness. Or darkness is the source of light. So this is the beginning of the canto. This is the book, end of the book. That night in her bosom is really building a greater dawn. That's the last line of Savitri. Night prepares a greater dawn. So night is a period of preparation. It's a period where things are simply building within us. It is not an absence of light. It is a concentration of light. But here at this stage, no alien night had come to blind her eyes. There was no use for grudging ring or fence. You see, that is a limit, a fence, a boundary. Each act was a perfection and a joy. So this is actually the vital heaven. What he's describing is there are heavens for every world. This, the universe is a play field of one world followed by another, and this is the vital world, the vital heaven, where all things in the vital plane are absolute, perfect, complete. Abandoned to her rapid fancies, moods, and the rich colored riot of her mind, it is as if a free play of imagination. Imagination is the creative energy that is there in that aspect of the mind. So this world of the vital heaven, she dreams of all kinds of possibilities of beauty and harmony and perfection. There are so many gods in these worlds. The gods of beauty, the gods of joy, the gods of power, the gods of harmony, all kinds of gods. And the rich colored riot of her mind, initiate of divine and mighty dreams, magician builder of unnumbered forms. Because these gods are there, we also dream. We also dream of a world of beauty and perfection. Where do these dreams come from to us? Because they come near us. These forces, these gods, sometimes come close to us, close to a few, like an artist or a genius or a visionary, might be as if connected to it, one of these gods. They come close to that, they inspire, they fill him with a new creative force, exploring the measures of the rhythms of God. At will, she wove her wizard wonder dance. So you get the image of these goddesses like the apsaras or the kinnaris, the singers, the musicians of heaven. There is no sense of right or wrong. They just are expressions of harmony and beauty and the joy of life. That is why at will she wove life, she is life, her wizard wonder dance, a Dionysian goddess of delight, a bacchant of creative ecstasy. Dionysus is not just the god of wine. Dionysus is the god of divine inspiration. When something comes, you see, he is the one that connects. Dionysus was one of the gods who is also one who connects earth to heaven, heaven to earth. So that is the thing, the image of that power that relates man from the higher worlds to the world of the physical life of man.
And what is Bacchant?
Bacchantus also. Bacchus is the Roman name, Dionysus is the Greek name. But Dionysus' mother was human. His father was Zeus. So you get this image of being some a being that connects the human, earthly, to the divine. That is the delight. But often in the Roman tradition, there is a kind of a diminishing of the spiritual significance of these gods. The same gods in their Greek forms have another universal, you might say, existence. The moment you bring them down to the Roman age was much more intellectual, mental. The Greeks were visionaries. So there's a change, as happens in all cultures. So Bacchus is the god of wine. Dionysus is also the god of wine, but he's the god of when the wine of inspiration, the wine of a divine ananda fills you. So this is the world that he saw. Then he sees in our plane, this world is darkened. There is the lower, you might say, aspect. This world of bliss he saw and felt its call. It's very beautiful. So beautiful that you don't want to get out of it. You go there and you stay there. It's the journey of the spirit, if you like. Like you have the notion of symbolic epics. The ancient epics are all symbolic stories. Odysseus had gone, had to find his way back home after having spent 10 years in Troy, on the beaches of Troy, and 10 years he took to go back home. Why did he take so long? Odysseus is, all the other Greek kings had gone back after the war. Odysseus did not go back home. He lost his way. He didn't know where is home. He went through all kinds of experiences. He found so many beautiful ones, he thought, I'll stay here. Just like man, the man who is most evolved. Of them all, he was the most evolved. He represented the intellect. Like we, you are more evolved if you have developed a sense of intellectual vision and understanding. So you can have many different ideals. You say, this is what I want. Later you say, no, that is much better. I would like to go there. So the path is not necessarily straight and simple and clear. The path becomes more complex. Your return to the origin is home. Home is where the divine exists. Home is right inside us. Home is what we are essentially. But we have lost that memory. We've forgotten. We look for home everywhere else except ourselves. So like Odysseus, he stops many times on many different islands. He says, this is where I will stay. This is the best place to be. And then after a while he realizes, no, this is not what I should have chosen to be. Then I have to move on. And so he took 10 more years to go back home. So 20 years he took to go back to his original home. But this world of bliss he saw and felt its call, but found no way to enter into its joy. Across the conscious gulf, there was no bridge. A darker air encircled still his soul, tied to an image of unquiet life. That is what happened. Ashwapati could not enter this world of perfect life world. Ananda, the heaven of Ananda, the heaven of divine life. Why? There was still the element of ignorance. It was still there, ego and darkness was there, tied to an image of unquiet life. Quietness comes only when there is a sense of fulfillment. He was still searching. He was not yet fulfilled. In spite of yearning mind and longing sense, to a sad thought by grey experience formed, and a vision dimmed by care and sorrow and sleep, all this seemed only a bright, desirable dream. Just as it may seem to us, this world of perfect joy seems just a world of dreams. Why? Because in our life also there is care, sorrow, ignorance, sleep, darkness, grayness. Grayness is not total darkness, but an absence of clarity of what is light and what is dark. It becomes a little uneasy for us to decide, is this light or is this dark? Is this right or is this wrong? The moment the mind starts to decide or try to understand, and we are filled with all kinds of other experiences. And the more we grow in this world, the more your experiences multiply. Experiences of life which are necessarily for the human being, accompanied by defeat, by failure, by pain. You cannot avoid them. Sooner or later they come. And so you say, life cannot give me perfect joy. If I want anything perfect, I have to withdraw from life. I have to go into a deeper state, away from the world of the play of life, in a deeper solitude, in a deeper concentration. But then I have to turn my back to life. But is that why life has been given to us, that we turn our backs to it? That is the whole problem. Or that is what Sri Aurobindo has come to tell us. Don't turn your backs to anything. You have to learn to go through every experience without losing touch with the central conscious presence. If you can find that inner presence inside and stay, if not identified with it, at least in touch. And that presence is there all around, actually. Not only within us, all around. Especially here, the air you breathe is full of it. As Mother says, here you cannot even breathe without breathing in the grace. The grace is always there. But we have lost our, you might say, connection. We know it is there, but we are busy with ourselves. Our little daily selves, with their daily needs and thoughts and ideas. And these come in the way. So all kinds of things other than the grace, other than the divine presence, take up all our time, all our attention. So this is the grey experience formed, and a vision dimmed by care and sorrow and sleep. All this seemed only a bright, desirable dream. So those who believe in this kind of perfect world of life, sometimes they are looked upon as, oh, you are childish, you are very simple, you are very innocent. And you say it with condescension. Actually, they are innocent. And it's a purity. It is, they are blessed. We think that we are superior because we have developed a mind. Conceived in a longing distance by the heart. It's a longing distance, far from. We have moved away from that original simplicity of life. Simplicity is so beautiful. There's this one of the first sentences I remember that mother taught us as children. Simplicity. How sweet is the purity of thy presence. Simplicity, simplicity. How sweet is the purity of thy presence. It is so difficult to be simple. So difficult to be pure. We love complications. We love to think I am intelligent, I am clever, I am wise. I can put one thing as compared to another and draw my own conclusion and so on. To be simple, to be natural, to allow the flow of that power to pass through me without interference. It is this, the purity of thy presence. She says, comme douce la pureté de ta présence. I still remember, as children, when we were very small, mother used to teach us one sentence every day. And then the next day, we had to go and repeat that sentence, and she would give a second sentence. Every day, one sentence. And then tell me what I taught you yesterday. And you say that sentence. Then she'd teach you another sentence. And these are actually values that she was... We didn't understand a thing. We were 3 or 4 years old. But it was something that is being planted, fortunately for us, without us knowing why. What was simplicity? We didn't know. But simplicity was a very, it was a plant, I remember. It was a very fresh smell. Very beautiful, very living, very fresh. So that freshness was what I remember. As I was very attracted to that smell of the simplicity plant. It's so beautiful, it's so simple, so fresh, so alive, without any complications. It asks for nothing. Now I can understand how difficult it is to be simple. Because that is what she says, be simple, be happy. You can't be happy if you're not simple.
Can you repeat the sentence? Can you repeat the sentence? Simplicité.
Comme est douce la pureté de ta présence. So this is what even he who had identified his consciousness with the supreme, highest Brahman, he is now passing through the other planes. He too is not quite capable of living continuously in this world of the Satchitananda. That is what he says now. Although he once had felt the Eternal's clasp, too near to suffering worlds, his nature lived. That is the thing. Though he had once felt the contact with the Supreme, he had come down to this world of division, and where he stood were entrances of night. The opposite of the world of light. That world that does not believe in the perfection of light, the manifestation of light in our world as it is. In our minds, in our lives, we do not believe. Somewhere there's a lack of faith. We don't believe in the constancy of the presence of the light. If you don't have that faith, you enter into night. You lose contact with that. So we stop here.